And for our folks who don't watch YouTube, Zach is freaking out and justifiably so.
I'm gonna swear. I'm gonna swear, and Tom, I'm gonna swear at you. Okay,
Yeah.
I'm gonna swear at you.
Yep.
Just know I love you.
Yep.
Earmuffs if you don't want to hear me swear right now, Tom. Remember, I love you. Hello and welcome to At the 55, your home for OUA football. Me and Tom are back on the mics to bring you episode 2 of the exit meeting, where we are breaking down in this one the McMaster Marauders. As a programming note, if you are following along in the series and listen to the York podcast, I obviously aired when I said that we'd be covering U of T today, which is out of perhaps just habit of thinking of those two teams being towards the bottom of the barrel a little bit. And if anything, is just going to make this one sting that much more for you, Tom Sterling. When we talk about your McMaster Marauders and just the state they've been in when you extrapolate over a few years, hasn't been too pretty. But before we get into some of the perhaps sad and ugly, let's start on the positive note, because I know you are an optimist through and through. Tom Sterling, how the heck are you doing, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing well, my friend. I'm doing well. This is one of those that I've kind of, I don't know how I want to feel about it, because it's just going to be dredging up some bad memories of the season, but we got to get through it. The McMaster Marauders have not exactly performed to the level that I expect them to, and we're going to dive into that and share why we think so.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Whether you're biting the bullet, ripping the band-aid off, or any metaphor in that vein, we're going to just dive into it. Obviously, we had Dakota Vine on talking about the York Lions, and we do have some other folks lined up for some interviews. We thought we had someone around the program for this one, but then we just figured, you know what? I mean, who better to kind of talk Mac football with than you, Tom? And I am just on pins and needles over here, because you have set me up that you have news that you have not shared with me yet in hopes to get my genuine reaction. But I understand that we're going to save that for when we talk about where Mac's looking going in 2024. So before we get to there, we have to look at how we got here. And before we even get into the 2023 season in specific, Tom, let me start by looking at this. 2019, this team wins the Yates Cup. And actually, let me even bring it back a little bit further, because we've obviously had a few exciting moments on social media through our at the 55 handle on Twitter and on Instagram. And though I don't personally use my social media all that much, I'd say one of my finer moments in the last 5 years or so was watching the Western Laval Vanier of 2018, when Laval wins at home. And I just remember tweeting something out to the effect of, because they had Coach Potasik on the broadcast panel saying something about, well, teams in the OUA need to watch this film as a way of looking at how you can beat those Western Mustangs. I tweeted something out to the effect of, confirmed, Steph Potasik to the OUA is returning to the OUA. And that was just a joking tweet based on him making that comment. Of course, he returns to MAC, and of course, he beats Western in that very next Yates Cup in London. We all remember that game as exciting as an exciting game. We then get the pandemic. We then go to the 2021-22 season, the shortened season, the OUA East, OUA West year, the six-game season. And arguably through no fault of their own, because I didn't go through every single game, they end up in a six-way tie for third place with all these teams at 3-3. They get the short end of the stick, no playoffs. We then go into our first return to an eight-game season, 22-23, where they wind up 2-6. Of course, one of those losses being the loss on technicality due to an ineligible player, thus giving York their only win in, in many, many moons. And then we lead in to 2023. And of course, that 22-23 season also marks the end of the Andreas Dewick era of MAC football, one of the great quarterbacks for a program that has been pumping out quarterbacks left, right, and center. The Keegan Hall era begins, and they go 2-6. They tie with U of T at that 2-6 mark, but because of a dreadful outing your Marauders had here in Toronto at Varsity Stadium, they end up on the lower echelon of that tie. Tom, let me pass it to you. Obviously, that then I didn't dive too thoroughly into the season as a whole. It's so odd thinking about Coach Potasik, your guy, this return he's had, starting on the highest of high notes, winning it all in the OUA. The pandemic, obviously, it was a wrench into everyone's plans and just this. Well, we'll dive into the details because there are some common threads in these years. From that big picture standpoint, what thoughts do you have looking at this team in this decade, really?
It's a difficult watch. This has been very frustrating as a McMaster fan. And it almost makes it worse because when you look at a lot of the games here, even just going back to this past year, they lose to Windsor in the home opener that you and I were at, 21-17. They lose to Western the next week, 34-22. And that game came down to, you know, the final drive kind of thing. So there were so many games, not just from last year, but from previous years, where they were so close, but they couldn't make that additional step in order to secure that. You know, obviously, 2022, they get hit with a roadblock with that loss to York. But even that, they're 3-5 if they have that. It's not exactly a great time to be a Marauder fan. And I think that loss, coupled with a lot of things that were going on, affected the team, affected the chemistry of the team. And there was a lot of stuff that happened outside of that as well. But still, like, this McMaster team does not have the ability to finish, whether in games and certain drives. How many times have they tried to go into the end zone or try to get into the red zone and haven't been able to do it, haven't been able to finish drives? It's just the story of this team. And a lot of that stems from the thing that you and I have been talking about for year after year after year, that O&D line needs to be so much better. So there's a lot of things, there's a lot of frustrations here. And I've been talking with a lot of Mac folks, obviously being an alumni myself. And now, especially after this year, because it's one thing, COVID year was goofy, whatever, 2022, okay, you know, it's nowhere near where we want to be, but there's that, you know, ineligibility, whatever you want to call it, fine. This year, it's the same stuff. You go 2-6 again. Yes, Andreas Duick leaves, but Keegan Hall is supposed to be right there. And now people are starting to look around and say, well, in 2019, that team that Coach P won with was technically Greg Knox's team because he recruited a lot of those players. He brought in guys like Todd Galloway and Corey Grant that could really give a jump to that offense for sure. But a lot of people have some things to say now, and a lot of people are starting to look at Coach P and say, hey, you know, this is not the legendary coach that we have come to expect from you. What's going on here?
Yeah, so many great things in what you said there. I mean, for one, the point about the 22-23 season, you're right. If they finish 3-5, they're still that eighth seed in the OUA, so they're still not making the playoffs. And then you mentioned the red zone, inability to score in the red zone. And what's interesting is that when you actually look at their red zone efficiency, purely from a scoring standpoint, they're tremendous. But they're splitting drives with sixes and threes. And we obviously saw Michael Horvat get recognized as a first or second team All-Canadian, if memory serves. Mm-hmm. And that's one of those, in the same way, if sometimes when you have an All-Canadian returner, there's sometimes
somehow it always comes back to Mr. Olay for you, eh?
I didn't say, who's talking about Alfred Olay? He's one of my favorite players in the OUA of the last 5 years. He is that guy. But, you know, when your kicker is producing highly in those regards, it's kind of one of those not so great things. And you mentioned the offensive line, defensive line, you know, guys like Ryan Leader in the mix for them, and Hubert as well. They've had some good pieces, but yeah, there's definitely been that piece, as you mentioned, of kind of some murmurs. And I know you're going to get into a lot of those murmurs, but let's go through this year a little more in detail. And obviously, if you've been following along with the podcast, you heard us go week by week in tracking this team, starting with our lovely outing we had there along with your pops at Ron Joyce Stadium for the loss to Windsor. And, you know, really, when you look at their schedule, and I think this is where it's the most frustrating, because you lose that game at home. Windsor was the better team, but at the end of the day, it was a muffed punt return that sets up Windsor in good territory to score, and just Windsor being one of those teams that once they get ahead of you is so hard to come back on because they can just chew up the clock. That defense is so stout to score on. So once they had made those mistakes, like Windsor is in that territory, though they still make some errors themselves, as we've talked about with penalties, where once they kind of get you, it's hard to come back against them. That Western loss, as we said, was an incredible, like as good a loss as any team probably had all year long, with them being a pick six. I believe it was a Max Nixon pick six away from them possibly going on a drive to take the lead late in that game. You get the big win at York, and obviously with York, year after year, it's that I once used the term the York Lion litmus test, where it's you're not going to say, well, we beat York, but you're really going to judge just how you played. And with Keegan Hall being a young guy, I think we were impressed. But if memory serves, they took him out at the half, which, you know what, in some regards, he put up stellar numbers. What's the point? But maybe for a young quarterback, you know, still get him some reps. Put that one to bed. Say what you want about it. You lose to Guelph. What was that, the first time in, oh, I don't know, ever Guelph wins a game at Ron Joyce, which, trust me when I say, that was pretty meaningful for the Guelph alum. Me not, of course, being the biggest Guelpher in the last couple of years, but hey, seeing a Guelph team finally pick up a win there. You lose to Laurier. That was expected. The loss to Toronto, atrocious. That was the game, as we said in the moment, we kind of alluded to it, setting this whole thing up, that if your offense just didn't show up, you might win the game. They turned the ball over so many times. I think U of T got two defensive scores, kind of leading us to that whole thing about, well, U of T's defense probably isn't the stellar turn the ball over scoring type of machine. Maybe they are, but likelihood, it's just you had that one fantastic outing. Great win at water, or at home versus Waterloo, as we talked about. They had kind of really attacked that gap scheme run offense that Waterloo loved to use. Then you drop the game to Ottawa. I think their destiny was already sealed when that game came around, though I certainly would say that they were pretty big underdogs in that game regardless. So I say all that in saying we go through the schedule. That loss to Toronto is unacceptable. The loss to Guelph at home, like, win that game. The loss to Windsor, well, hey, that would have been huge. But, you know, at the end of the day, you can't be too mad at them. Whole point of that spiel is it comes back to this thing where that I think just drives, as you said, Mac fans, alumni, and as we've seen after the season, not just in whispers and murmurs, but on comments that some players have made on social media, have driven the Mac faithful at all aspects of this team bananas. And as we talked about, that defense was stellar, but there was a bit of a schism towards the end of the season when things kind of went south for them all.
When you start seeing defensive players posting pretty openly, not from burner accounts, from their personal accounts, saying, imagine if Mac actually had an offense, imagine if we had an offensive coordinator. Like, there is so many times watching this team this past year where there were times where the defense would come out, unbelievable job, three and out at times, whatever. And then immediately afterwards, not just the offense goes three and out and the defense has to come back on again. Immediately afterwards, it's a pick or it's a fumble. And the defense has to come out after one play to come back out onto the field to try to defend things. And so it doesn't matter how good of a defense you are. If you're constantly being put into those kind of scenarios, of course you're going to let up points. And even to that credit, against unbelievable offenses like Western and Laurier, the most that this defense gives up is 36 points. That's very manageable if you have a functioning offense here. And I'm willing to bet as well, if that offense is performing how it should, that they're not scoring that much because the defense isn't on the field that much. So this, like, easily, just looking at some of the opportunities that they had here, there's a real possibility for them to be 6-2 in this year, based on a few bounces here. Obviously, you have to finish against Windsor, but that's not Windsor's first, like, that's not Windsor's best game for sure. And there was multiple times where they had the opportunity to take the lead. So you could potentially do that there. The Western one, that's a bit of a stretch, but still, they had the opportunity in the fourth quarter to come back and to score a touchdown to go up in that one. The Guelph game, for sure, there's opportunities to win there. Laurier beat them pretty handily. I'm not going to guess that they could come back with that. They should have beaten Toronto. And I don't know. I think that Ottawa game, I think Ottawa was just outright the better team there, so they would have beaten them outright as well. But still, like, they had the opportunity to win almost every one of these games late into the final quarter or third quarter of all of them. So it's not even like you don't have the players. It's not whatever. You were put in the scenarios to win here, and you just could not get it done. And that is the part that makes me want to pull my hair out more than anything.
Well, let's get into that point you raise about it's not as if you didn't have the players, because if you didn't have the players, you wouldn't be in these games. And if you listen to our New Year's resolution podcast, I believe this was the angle that we took in large part when we talked about Mac, and we used the roster to look at a few teams. But let's just read through some of the names as far as their eligibility, and obviously COVID, as we've highlighted. If you're tuning in through the podcast, Tom's making a face. I imagine you probably have some notes on this too. Mm-hmm. But as we highlighted in time after time, the COVID exception year, whatever you want to call it, or whatever it's supposed to be referred to as, has made figuring out just who's eligible and who's not a little more difficult. But let's just allow us the grace to go by what it says on these roster pages and sort of what you might anticipate. So as far as fifth-year eligibility guys as of last year, so you'd anticipate being graduating out, you have guys like Eric Bujalski, Ryan Leader, and Jacob Bradley. Not as familiar with Bradley as far as being a part of that offensive line, though, you know, arguably, and hey, like, once again, nothing we ever do here is coming from a place of trying to take a shot at any one player or any individual at all. But as you mentioned, we mentioned it all year long, do I need to go back to talking about cardboard cutouts? That offensive line was poor. But Ryan Leader is a guy who got drafted in the spring of 23, comes back, had a great season for them. Watch that Waterloo tape. He's one of those guys blowing up that run game for them. Bujalski, another great part of that defense. But then we talk about guys who might be getting drafted, and at the top, just having the sword by eligibility, is a guy like Nana Yasirbe, who is just a massive part of what makes that defensive secondary so good, along with Josh Cumber in year four, Devontae Ballantyne as well, and just sticking specifically on the defense, just to name one name in particular, a guy like Owen Hubert, brother of Silas. Another great part of that defensive line. You throw in names like Danny Bossett, who... we talk about that offense and what it's been lacking. They haven't had a good running game. Like, even when Justice Allen was there, like, they weren't a top running attack. It's been since the days that, you know, that jersey in the background wasn't behind glass. It was on your chest, and you lead blocking for these guys since they've had a really effective running attack. By saying that and saying that Daniel Bossett was one of the reasons that they were able to run at times. And then you also graduate out, or fourth year guy, so a bit in the gray area here, a guy like Jacob Mason, kind of in that fullback tight end, one of your better blockers. So, and a couple other O-linemen too that I'm going to just hand you the mic and let you speak on, where it's like, yeah, as you highlight, as we're talking about, this is a team that absolutely could have gone in that 5-3, 6-2 area. Maybe Ottawa is outright better, but maybe in that last game of the season, they're going to Ottawa vying for playoff position, and it means that much more to them and all these things. And you have the horses, you have the dogs to compete with them, but it's, and not to say there isn't talent in some of the younger ranks, but this, it's what a window that this was for them.
Mm-hmm. What? When you look at all of the names here, and you mentioned a few of them, I'm just going to go through. And like you said, with COVID, there's a lot of things that could be up in the air that could have certain people come back. Some people might be done, whatever the case. I'm just going to go through the list of names that are listed as fifth-year players for McMaster. Jacob Patton, wide receiver. D. McNadievich, wide receiver. Josh Cumber, defensive back. Danny Bossett, running back. Connor Bedeen, defensive back. Jacob Mason, fullback. Eric Bujalski, linebacker. Daniel Stefanik, defensive end. Greg Thomas, defensive end. Owen Hubert, defensive end. Paul Badalana, offensive line. Ryan Leader, defensive end. Jacob Bradley, Peyton McWilliam, Taylor Burns, Michael Martin, all offensive linemen. 16 listed fifth-year players. If you want to include the fourth years in there as well, there's 35 players on this McMaster football team that are either in their fourth or fifth year. this is an old squad. These guys should have had, for the most part, a lot of playing experience going into this, these kind of games. And you're in the area. And like we said, there's a lot of things with the COVID year or whatever else. But if you don't lose them this year, you're going to lose the majority of them next year. So there's a lot of senior leadership on this team here that you need to take advantage of. You need to recruit behind for sure. But obviously those 2 years, I believe that would have been 2018, 2019, or 2019 and 2020, depending on the years themselves. Those were great recruiting years because you have a lot of guys playing from those. How well have you recruited behind them? I'm sure we're going to find out here soon, but that it makes me very nervous, especially in fifth year seniors. 9 of those 16 are on the offensive and defensive line. 9.
Yeah. And, you know, good job by you in reading out that list, because I had it sorted by eligibility, but obviously the year level also just indicates that, like, whether they've played out their eligibility or not, they might just be graduating, right? That's mm-hmm. obviously a factor. We're talking about university football in this regard. So then taking that point further, when you look at some of the guys that are some of the other guys that are fourth-year players, but only 3 years eligibility, so thinking about guys that might be draft eligible, we're now also including into that mix. Or maybe I have this backward, but you also start to now talk about the Jackson Coolings, or is he going to be East-West? Let's get this straight. With Jackson Cooling being fourth year schooling, third year eligibility, would that be draft eligible, or is this East-West year? We should have probably figured this out beforehand, but
yeah, it's difficult once again because of the COVID year to try to suggest certain things. I think they'll put him in his East-West.
Yeah, okay,
I think so because he hasn't gone there yet, but.
That makes
it's still, yeah.
Yeah, no, that makes more sense. That makes more sense as a minor aside as well. I mean, you mentioned the name Peyton McWilliam. He was on the freshman 15 that we did. So just to make me feel a bit old from that standpoint. So, like, pumping the brakes a little bit, right? Because you're talking about, well, then who's next? Like, who's to come underneath them? And, like, a lot of those guys could be back, right? And so we won't know until we see it. We preface this whole series of the exit meeting ticket. That is the exit meeting series. I knew the exit ticket word was going to come into effect at some point. Apologies, I'm a teacher. But it is in part looking at last year, but then to the extent we're looking forward, it is a little bit of that way, 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 way too early preview of what's to come. So let's frame it like this. This is a major sliding doors moment for this team, because in that level right below, you do have the class that includes guys like Jackson Cooling, as we said, mm-hmm. Keegan Hall, Teo Smith, Drake Bodie, Carter Blad, Mitch Price, James Priestner, Alex Chang. I think those are the main names I wanted to mention. A couple of guys below there, Ethan Monahan, a guy who transferred from Guelph. So it's a huge sliding moment, especially because most of those names I mentioned are offensive players in that passing attack. We obviously have talked so much about how when Mac 1-19 with, of course, Corey Grant calling up the offense, it was so heavily on that passing attack. So could you see Mac return to that even with Coach Grant, that is, being at Carleton? Maybe. But a lot of those names we talked about as possibly leaving are on the defensive side of the ball, in that linebacking, in that secondary core, which it's the perpetual frustration of university sport, which is that you have this stellar defense and you just don't quite have the pieces to match it on offense, and you're ending drives with threes instead of sixes, some untimely turnovers because a young quarterback, a poor offensive line, and all these things, and then maybe that, you know, manifests into a little frustration in the locker room, whatever it might be. And we can look on the horizon and say, oh, your offense might be coming of age, but that defense is now possibly aging out, and that just perpetual frustration that only the Westerns of the world are able to mitigate, because they're constantly filling those coffers with the best of the best and having the best of the best coaching staffs there year in, year out, which is just, it's just super frustrating. But, like, looking through these names, going through all these guys of being, you know, in that fifth, fourth, third year, it takes me back like 10 years ago to at Guelph when we had a couple really prime recruiting classes get into that stage. And I don't think we have to look beyond the names that we've talked about already to say that, like, yeah, there are some really good teams in the OUA right now. And that's been one of the great joys of calling, doing this broadcast with you right here in this time, as much as any other reason, is that the football is so good and it's so competitive. And this makes it so much more heartbreaking when a team like this that, let me put it like this, if this team's playing, you could envision maybe this roster like 10 years ago or something like that, or at another time when it was slightly more top heavy and the middle of the pack wasn't too good, of for sure being like in that 6-2 range, no doubt. So I don't know. It's tough, because when you really look at this team, and that's what we're trying to do here today, if you're following along at home and keeping score, is that, you know, much like we probably will talk about with some of these other teams that didn't either make the playoffs or fare all that well, is that, like, there's still so much there. There's still so much there. A team that was 2-6 was, like, has all this talent. And we don't need to obviously talk about, like, well, does the school care about it the same way we talk about York? This is MAC football we're talking about. This isn't a question of, like, do they have the support? And obviously, I don't know the ins and outs from that standpoint. I'm willing to say that if MAC football can be good, all efforts are going to be made to make it good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most definitely. I think there's a lot of things that might be going on with this McMaster team here, regardless of what you want to attribute things to. They're 2-6, and it's not, that's not where anybody wants to be at all in this organization. That's not where Coach P wants to be, anything. The piece of information that I have here that I wanted to share with you. Now, it's still technically in the rumor stage, so which is why we haven't made an official post about it. However,
I love rumors.
I have a very reliable source here that says 90% sure Scott Brady will be leaving the McMaster Marauders to take on the defensive coordinator position at the University of Guelph Griffins. Yeah, and for our folks who don't watch YouTube, Zach is freaking out, and justifiably so.
I'm going to swear, and Tom, I'm going to swear at you, okay? Yeah. I'm going to swear at you. Yep. Just know I love you. Earmuffs, yep. If you don't want to hear me swear right now. Tom, remember, I love you. Fuck you, man. Fuck you. Let's go, Guelph, baby. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My gosh.
So, a lot of things in there. Obviously, holy God, what does that do for the Guelph Griffins? But we're not on that podcast right now. What I want to talk about more so.
What about Donovan Carter?
Scott Brady, who we've already discussed, is head coach caliber player. To go from defensive coordinator to defensive coordinator says more to me about what's going on in that McMaster coach's room than anything else. I am very nervous about the future of Mac if that turns out to be true, because that means that there's a lot of things happening in that coach's room that's not what people want. Wow. Scott Brady was the highlight of everything Mac football last year. His defense in particular played unbelievably well. And if they had a supporting cast around them, even an offense that didn't constantly seem to give away the ball in really key moments here, they're a top three defense. I'm willing to say that. You lose him and potentially lose all of the guys who are fourth and fifth year who are on the bubble about coming back or not. This is a very dangerous place for McMaster to be right now.
This is, oh my gosh, do I ever hope this comes true? Tom, I'm sorry for swearing at you. Particularly,
it's okay. It's the heat of the moment, my man.
And clearly in a moment of schadenfreude and just taking pleasure in your displeasure. What a great point you raised, though, of just all the implications of this, of him possibly making a lateral move. And of course, by the time we post this, we're recording on the 22nd, we'll be posting this on the 25th. So there's a bit of time to let that flesh out. So maybe this will be old news, or it'll be a whatever they call it, the hot take exposed, cold take exposed, whatever. What's so fascinating about that is so many things. But we obviously Coach Potasik, not an old dog by any means. Potasik's still, a fairly young man, all things considered. He started his coaching career as a head coach pretty young in the going. But nonetheless, he's been there. He's been back at Mac now, 5 years? 4 or 5 years in that ballpark, roughly the time span of a contract, and maybe they're renewing him. I don't know the details of this. I am just for the record, I am just spitballing. I am just throwing stuff at the wall, seeing what sticks. And you could see, and as a bonus about Scott Brady, he's on the recruiting trail.
Oh, God, a lot of guys offensively and defensively who committed to Mac because of Scott Brady.
100%. But the original point I'm getting at is, like, you could see a world where another disappointing season for Mac, Potasik's out, and they elevate Scott Brady.
Mm-hmm.
As you mentioned, he not only makes a lateral move, but he makes a lateral move to a school that just put a new man in the captain's seat. Or whatever that metaphor is supposed to be. And a very young man at that, or I don't know his exact age, but like a first-time head coach in Mark Soria. So to your point about whether it's the coaching room or just something in that organization that just didn't smell right for Coach Brady, if this is coming to fruition, because once again, this is incredible. My bald brethren heading from the Highway 6 south to north, but that is, if this comes to pass, like, yeah, that's huge that he's going in a position where his odds of becoming a head coach probably lessened, but maybe he's just embracing a win baby mentality. I can't wait to die. I mean, golly, what does that mean about Donovan Carter and all those things? But this isn't a Guelph pod, this is a Mac pod.
Said, it's still in that rumor stage. If it was 100% concrete, we would have a post about it like we did with Coach Janke at York, which we called right, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So there is still some risk in the idea of maybe this is true, maybe it's not true, whatever. But the source that I have is very reliable. They think that this is 100% legit, and we could be seeing a massive change at Mac. I guarantee you, if Scott Brady leaves and they continue to have the production that they have over the past 2-3 years. I don't know what kind of contract that Coach Potasik might have signed. I think he's out if they continue. If not only do they go 2-6 again, 1-7, whatever it is, but they lose Scott Brady, one of the great football minds in the OUA right now. It's a hard case to keep P in there.
But so they don't have a defensive coordinator. If this comes true, then they don't have a defensive coordinator. Coach Potasik's your offensive coordinator. So you're getting a new, if this happens, you're getting a new DC as of the 24-25 season, which is called the 24 season. The season only happens within one calendar year. You get a new DC in the 24 season. If things go to heck in a handbasket, all these players age out. Some of them get drafted, specifically, as we said, defensive guys. So you're having a new guy come in, on top of all of it, one of your better recruiters when you have an old team might be leaving. And then on the flip side, so it's understandable if this team has another poor year, even though we haven't really talked about Keegan Hall yet, and we really should do that, because at the end of the day, if you have a guy at quarterback, you have a chance to win ball games. We've seen that happen with some teams with much less talent than this Mac team has. But just staying on this thread before we get there, you then think, well then, like, not knowing who that guy could be that they'd bring in as the DC if this comes to pass, but then you say, okay, understandably, maybe you didn't have a great year, or maybe you played a little bit over your skis with Keegan Hall taking another step, but then if P goes, he's your offensive coordinator too. So in the course of 2 years, you get a new DC, a new head coach, a new OC. Like, the Keegan Hall era is gone. Like, that's because he's going into his fourth year of school, right? He sat behind Duick for 1 or 2 years. Like, you've kind of scorched the earth on this era. And maybe you have to do that. And maybe that's the reality of what it is. But wow, that is something. Any more on that for now? I'm sure we keep going on that. But like I said, we haven't really talked about Keegan Hall yet. And like, we probably should dedicate a good little chunk of time talking about that young man from your neck of the woods in the Golden Horseshoe.
Most definitely. He's definitely going to be, he already was the focal point for this offense last year. He's going to be, continue to be so going into this year as well. But man, there's a lot of things that are talked about with Coach Potasik now that things aren't going well. And I think that a big part of the reason why he is still there, obviously, don't get me wrong, Coach Potasik was my head coach. He's a hell of a coach. There's a reason why I committed to Mac over everybody else, and he was a big part of that. I have nothing but respect for this man, but there are a lot of Mac people, whether they be alumni or people who are close to the game, who are not happy with Potasik, who are now starting to point things out like, oh, this guy doesn't like to recruit, he doesn't like to have tough conversations with people, all of this stuff that's constantly coming out about him. And whether that's right or wrong, whether that's true or not, because they're not doing well, that's up for debate. But needless to say, people are not happy with Mac. And rightfully so. They are not where they should be. With all of the talent that we have here, they are not where they should be. And especially when you're looking at a guy like Keegan Hall. This guy, I've been saying this since day one, he has the makings to potentially be an all-star, and like a first-team all-star in the OUA with guys like Evan Hillock, Taylor Elgersma, and everybody else who are unbelievable at what they do. I really think the world of this kid. I think he has the potential there. But when you get sacked as many times as he had, when you get pressured and hurried, that comes at a detriment there. When you are asked to throw the ball as often as he is, in 8 games, they listed here 7 games on the OUA website, but in 8 games, he attempted the pass 262 times. That is second in the OUA overall. And in the run game, just so that everybody's on the same page, they were second last. So all of that means to say all of the offensive production is being put on the shoulders of Keegan Hall. And I don't know how much support he really has around them, whether it's from the coaching staff or from the players themselves on the field here. I think that if this kid was really given a chance here, I think he has the potential to do unbelievable things. And I hope that they do whatever they have to put this kid into position to succeed, because when this guy succeeds, the whole team will succeed.
And that's kind of that question, or that's kind of that thought experiment, that with guys like Jackson Cooling, if we see James Priestner, like, did we see him play last year?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. But in theory, you have one outstanding receiver and another guy that, like, last we saw him playing for Mac in 22 was phenomenal. But, you know, you mentioned some of these other quarterbacks, and like, we talked about this at some point in the season about the incredible, like, class of quarterbacks that are starting for teams right now, all in like their third year of the programs. And it's probably an unfair exercise because, though, as I highlighted, and I think most people will agree, once again, if you have a stellar quarterback, you can make up for a lot of flaws. But still, if that quarterback doesn't have protection, doesn't have people to make plays for him, and doesn't have a defense, all these other things, there's only so much you can do. But like, you're not taking Hall over Hillock, certainly not. You're not taking Hill over Elgersma. We know that for sure. Here's where we get a little tough here, Tom. Are you taking him over Tristan Lefebvre?
Me personally?
Yeah. Okay. Now, I'll let you say it. Like, this is where it's tough because you have more faith in it because you understand where he came from and the talent that's there. I've seen Tristan Lefebvre, albeit in 1 year, and with a passing system around him that has allowed him to flourish. So I've just seen with my eyes at the OUA level, and once again, all those other aspects. But from that standpoint, Lefebvre's the better quarterback from that point alone. But so you wanted to jump in on that, though.
Yeah. So when I say I would take Keegan Hall third, I'm talking about his potential. And like you said, I have a bias because I did see him play in high school. I have seen his production here, and I have an idea of where I think he could be. But if you're just purely looking at offensive production from this past year, I don't think he cracks the top five. The croc like he's at the bottom actually, or the bottom tiers of the top 10. Like he just doesn't have the performance around him, and I don't really think that that's a detriment to him.
And fair, and maybe that's how I should be framing it. As far as like the passing attacks, like that, this team hasn't had an effective run game in some time. They've shown that with a really good defense, special teams, and a strong passing attack, they've won a championship in recent memory with guys that are on this roster. But so looking at that, so let's look at it as their passing attack. Laurier's is better. Western's is better. Carlton's is better. Ottawa's is better. Mm-hmm. Guelph's is better.
Mm-hmm.
Ottawa's, Windsor's, you're probably taking as well. And then, like, you're getting into this point right now where it's like Waterloo has some young quarterbacks and some playmakers that, you know, we'll talk about Waterloo, I guess, next week at time of recording or at time this is coming out as well, where now you're kind of in that territory, and except that Waterloo has a much better running attack. Of course, Mac won that game, but that came more to Mac's defense solving that running attack. So, man, this is it's certainly troubling for this Mac team. I don't know what direction do you want to go in with this now, Tom? I mean, we're 40 minutes in this conversation, and like I'm trying to find some bright spots, but. Like and there is like because you can look at that class of guys around Keegan Hall in the receiving core, whoever they're recruiting. But if this, but especially like with you dropping that possible news of coming to pass, but as you mentioned, you're pretty trusting in your sourcing on this. That if Brady's gone, like this is disastrous. This is like if you don't play York next year, you might. Not win a game type of like territory. Mm-hmm. It's just like the vibe I get from hearing that, unless like you're recruiting your you know what off. But yeah
no, it's there's a lot of things it's there's a lot of things here that make me very nervous as a Mac fan, as an alumni. There's a lot of possibilities here that could lead to some really detrimental years for McMaster, not just for this year upcoming, but for recruiting years going forward as well to try to get our way out of this. So, yes, as a Mac alumni, as a Mac fan, first and foremost, I am nervous as hell. I really want to see this team come together. I'd love to see some more production from that offensive line because, once again, you and I harped on it the entire year. That offensive line needs to be better. Almost all of the issues from the offense can be boiled down to that offensive line. Not having the run game, Keegan Hall getting hit and pressured too much, the sacks taken, the unnecessary interceptions because he's trying to get the ball thrown. A lot of those can be brought back to the offensive line. And there's a lot of them that are in their fourth and fifth year, which means that the guys behind them have the opportunity to come up. And obviously there's positives and negatives in that. The positives being, you know, there's new potential, new guys coming in, whatever. But the negative, they're brand new. And you and I both know getting chemistry on an offensive line between all five guys is paramount in order to establish proper running and passing concepts. So it makes me very nervous there. The potential to lose Scott Brady is a massive blow to this program here because of the defenses that he ran and the capability that his defense had this past year. They played absolutely lights out in certain areas, forcing teams into bad situations and giving the offense every opportunity that they needed to try and score points and put them into the game and put them into places to be successful here. Once again, when you take a look at the roster, tons of talent across the board here. A lot of guys who have a lot of potential, certainly. You know, even in your fourth year guys who might be third years, but once again, it's a little confusing with the COVID year. But like, Jackson Cooling, Nana Yasurbe, Demetrius Masuka, Ricardo Chisholm, Devontae Ballantyne, obviously Keegan Hall, Ethan Stewart, Teo Smith, Drake Bodie, Carter Blad, Eric McCulchin, Nathan Paulin, Caleb Dar, Nate Steves, James Priestner, Alex Chain, Mitch Price, Malik Boulay, and Simon Ryan Poulard. Those are all the fourth-year players there. There are some studs in that list that I just read out here, and if you can properly utilize them in offensively and defensively, this team is going to be okay. But I'm very nervous for the future of Mac. I'm very nervous for how this next year is going to boil out here, especially if, like we said, Scott Brady does end up leaving to go to Guelph. I am forever the optimist in all things in my life. I'm finding it very hard to try to find some bright spots right now with Mac.
Yeah, and we've said it for a while now. I mean, Nana, I don't know his measurables off the top of my head, but he's the type of guy that I think we're going to be talking about come April into May when CFL teams start drafting. You know, I just pulled up, the offensive line thing as another thing here. I mean, we've been talking about it for 2 years now. And I'm just looking at, like, by the numbers based on Keegan Hall, he gets sacked 3 times that first game against Windsor, and, like, he's running all over the place. Now, we learned pretty quickly Windsor's defense is one of the best in the country, and their pass rushers were some of the best in the country, guys like Kaladia Moosen and Move the Heck Out of My Way Agelli. He gets sacked 3 times against Laurier, and, like, same thing there with Brubaker and those fellas getting after him. But if you recall in our New Year's resolution pod, we talked about Ottawa, get some pass rushers. You got to Keegan Hall twice. Even Western sacked you once, and Western only sacks quarterbacks when it's the Yates Cup. So, I mean, man, oh man, it's, and then of course, just that, the 3 interceptions against U of T, 2 interceptions against Guelph. I mean, I'm fully trusting in what you say about this kid. Like we said, like, this is my way of taking a shot at him, because, as we said, there's obviously all those other mitigating factors, and, like, he shows the talent, like the arm talent, the way he moves and things like that. Like, I do believe in him, and I certainly believe that football is more, isn't a one-man, one-person affair, but, man, was it ever a rough start for him in really his first year of starting. And you can see, not wanting to play like armchair psychologist here, but it's like, it's really a make or break for him, right? And if they do bring in another person to call up the offense, but keeping Coach P, now he's learning a new offense and all these things, where it's it's getting to the point where, like, I'm not even, I, Tom, in large part because of my love for you, but also just because, like, I'm not that big of an a-hole. Like, I'm feeling bad right now for, like, the worst case scenario is for your Marauders. But, you know, we'll continue to be the optimists here and just look at that potential and how they can revamp that O-line and how Keegan Hall can rise from the adversity of the season. And if Brady leaves, that they'll get a new DC in and all these things, and they'll find a new OC, and that'll, whatever it'll be, and James Priestner will be back, and some of those, you know, Nana will be back, and some of those other guys that might get drafted will return into the fold for them. I got nothing else, Tom. Last words to you before we wrap up episode 2. And what I thought episode 1 was hot when we were talking about the York Lions, but my man, oh man, this was something special here. Yeah, last words to you before we wrap it up for your McMaster Marauders.
Once again, the players here are really what the bright spot is for this McMaster team. We talked a lot about the offense in particular. I did want to shout out somebody on the defense, Drake Bodie.
Yes.
Linebacker for these McMaster Marauders was the real stud of a player for them this past season. He finished with 40.5 total tackles, 2 sacks, 4.5 tackles for loss, and was just all over the field for these guys constantly. Mitchell Price and Alex Chain being the enforcers in the middle of that defense ate up doubles and were constantly constantly making sure that guys like Drake Bodie and Eric Bajalski were able to run around and make the tackles that they needed to. I think that this defense has a lot of players. I think they've got a lot of people who are coming back who have the potential to be stars. And what I want to see, and obviously we don't know what happens behind closed doors, but I want to see this defense hold the offense accountable here. You need to do it in the proper way. Obviously, it's not, hey, what the hell are you guys doing, whatever else. But I think it's completely appropriate for especially the captains of that defense to come up to the offense and say, hey, guys, we're busting our asses trying to make sure that we're keeping guys out of the end zone and setting you guys up. We need to see you guys convert. We need to see you get those additional wins, not just for the team as a whole, but for your defense in particular here. And that doesn't always mean you got to go out and you got to score a touchdown every single time. Sometimes that means, hey, you're pinned on your own 10-yard line. Get out to the 40 and flip the field for us so that we're not playing the defense or playing the offense already in our own end when we punt the ball off. Maybe that just means, hey, you know what? Let's keep these guys off the field. Let's go for an extended long drive, flip the field once again, or even just chew up a bunch of clock here. Give your defense some time to sit on the sidelines, get rested, come back out onto the field. It doesn't always mean convert touchdowns, even though obviously you're always aiming for touchdowns every single drive, but just do a little bit more for your defense here. Let's put everybody in positions to succeed, because with the talent that you have on this field, you should be able to win these games. It's not out of the question here to look at the guys that they have here and say, if things go right, if people are put in the proper scenarios, if certain position groups, players play to the best of their abilities, this could easily be a 5-3 football team. Easily. So there's a lot of ifs in there, certainly, but it's not like you don't have any potential. And I think that's really where the negativity or, you know, the downtrodden that you and I both feel is because with York, it's sorry, York, they're at the bottom and nobody expects them to be anywhere other than at the bottom. With Mac, the expectation is at least middle of the pack. If not, you're fighting for the upper echelon there and you have the potential to do so. Reach into that potential, pull it out of your butts, and try to make 24 at least getting back on track for where this MAC team should be. You have the players to do so. There's going to be a lot of talk, you know, from media guys like us going into this next season.
Media guys.
Shut the noise out, put the maroon on, and get back to winning.
Amen. I mean, you named off some of those defensive guys, and I just scrolled. I love this defense, just going by the names, man. And obviously we know who's calling it up. We've said his name a heck of a lot of times today. And like, you know, man, oh man, you brought a guy like Chris Hopkins, who oversaw some great rushing attacks for Carlton, coaching up running backs there, you know, in the mix here. And obviously when you got Jamie Berese coaching up your quarterbacks too, like on all facets, it should work. And that goes back to just that core theme of, if you were going to like put it all into a word, it's frustration, but at the same time, it's maybe optimism at the same time. But at the same time, maybe it's pessimism. I don't know what it's going to be, but certainly frustration in the mix there. And despite being, you know, having little love in my heart for your McMaster Marauders, you know, like I said, the worst case scenario of all these things we talked about is enough to even make me go, all right, and stop the fight, stop the fight. But let's stop it at that, because I think we've said enough and more about these McMaster Marauders for their exit meeting. Now that I have my ducks in a row and I remember how the OUA football season finished, our next episode of the exit meeting will be going back to Toronto to talk about the U of T Varsity Blues. And much like we did with our York Lions podcast, you'll be hearing another familiar face from our At the 55 family coming on to talk to us about that team. Who will it be? Well, you'll have to find out by tuning in right here at the 55.